Sean Canzano. Raw. Sourced. Fresh. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, built by High Caliber Millwrights, this is the bald-faced truth.
All right, welcome back in. Bald Faced Truth. Judah Nubian for John Canzano today. JC down in Vegas for the Pac-12 tournament. A flurry of NFL moves, of course, across the league with the new league year beginning. And a lot of notable moves going on in Seattle with the Seahawks. And no better man to talk about it than Bob Condotta of the Seattle Times. Bob, thanks for taking the time and joining us here in Portland.
Sure. How you doing?
Doing pretty well. I gotta confess though, let's start with Earl Thomas, and then we'll get to a lot of the moves that transpired in the last 24 hours with the Seahawks. But I saw the news of Earl going to Baltimore, and though I was in a way ready for it, when it actually came into fruition and I saw the deal that he signed and the fact that he got capital P paid by the Ravens, it was hard not to get a little emotional seeing Earl and just the thought of him suiting up for another team. What was your reaction when you saw Earl Thomas signing in Baltimore for 4 years and $55 million and $33 million guaranteed and $22 million in the first 9 months?
Yeah, I mean, I knew it was coming. Maybe as a media guy, you look at it slightly more objectively, and you could tell for a long time he wasn't going to be back. So I never thought for a second. And kind of talking to some people afterward, I mean, he never talked to the Seahawks. They never talked to him. I mean, there was no negotiating between that. It was just simply a matter of where he was going to go. Baltimore caught me a little bit by surprise for sure. I hadn't really. Baltimore has been kind of a weird team in free agency, let some really big guys go and then signing a couple other guys, just sort of really trading some pieces here. I still figured there was a way it was going to work out for him in Dallas, because I think it was pretty obvious that was probably where he, if all things had been equal, where he really wanted to go. But I don't think the money was close with Dallas, and so I think ultimately he still, he kind of went through this to get one last really big NFL payday. Having had the injuries he's had the last couple of years, I think he, kind of learned more than ever how fragile the business is, and knows that being 30 and all that, he had to sort of strike while he could. So, he's going to go there, and it'll be interesting because they come back to Seattle next year. But, he did ultimately get sort of the deal he wanted. I mean, I think he wanted more than that. I mean, you heard that from out of Dallas that he was maybe asking for $15 million down there. I think maybe he thought, maybe Dallas wanted him so much they would sort of give that to him as well. But, ultimately the deals, you can always spin these deals a lot of different ways. And as you noted, if you kind of go with the $32 million guaranteed over the first 2 years, he's averaging $16 million essentially in his pocket over the first 2 years of the deal. And then, who knows, maybe at that point he gets to negotiate another one or something. So, I think he's happy to move on, and he's with the team that's got a chance to be really good too. Baltimore made the playoffs this year, and kind of an exciting team. So he's probably looking forward to all of that.
What a bizarre last couple of years for him in Seattle, Bob, and with the injury history and the valleys that those experiences provided, the Players Tribune piece that he had saying, look, Seattle needs to extend me or trade me. And ultimately, neither of those two things happen. To his final play in a Seahawk uniform that ends with him flipping off the sideline. I mean, that's just it's a real bizarre finish to the career of one of the greatest Seahawks of all time. How do you think he ultimately will be remembered in Seattle?
I think time sort of heals all wounds on these things, and I think he'll ultimately. I anticipate there'll be a day he'll come back and, played 9 years here, six Pro Bowls, I think three first team All Pro nominations. I mean, I think he's probably in the top five or six or so of, all time great Seattle players when you put all that together. Having been old enough and gone through Kenny Easley's, the end of his career here, it could hardly be more ugly than that. I mean, he sued the team and basically, won a huge financial settlement from the team, basically accusing them of ending his career for the way they mismanaged his his health and all of that. And, you know, 25 years later or whatever, he's back and number retired and standing ovations and all that. So, you know, I think eventually it'll come around to all of that. You know, there's been a lot of harsh endings here. Unfortunately, that's sort of how it goes a lot of times, yeah. Maybe in professional sports these days. It's hard to just kind of have the graceful exit because often, especially with the finances that get involved, teams sort of maybe want you to move on earlier than you do or you know, just sort of a change in what people think their value is as it gets older. You know, Richard Sherman's wasn't real super graceful either, and Marshawn Lynch's was certainly kind of bizarre. You know, maybe it's just kind of the nature. I mean, you look at what's going on in Pittsburgh, you know, the way they lost two of their best players is just kind of, you know, as contentious as could be, kind of partying. So maybe it's just sort of the way things go these days. But, you know, I think 10 or 15 years from now, for sure, I think, you know, there will be that day when Earl comes back and they put him in the Ring of Honor and sort of all is at least forgiven from that standpoint.
We're talking to Bob Condotta, Seattle Times, here on the Bald-Faced Truth. As far as the moves that Seattle did make in terms of acquisitions, I know they lost J.R. Sweezy with Arizona picking him up, but, you know, lo and behold, it's kind of a plug-and-play signing for Seattle as well with that left guard void opening. I'm reading reports of Mike Iapati, the longtime 49er and most recently Arizona Cardinal, coming to Seattle. What are your thoughts on Iapati in Seattle?
Yeah, it's sort of keeping in line with exactly what they did last year. You know, signing a guy that they know well, Mike Solari, who's Seattle's offensive line coach, coached Iupati for 5 years with the 49ers. So he's very familiar with the system. When you say plug and play, that's exactly what it is. As a guy that they won't have to teach anything, he'll know exactly what they want to do from day one. You know, the big question, but it's exactly the same way they got Fluker and Sweezy last year, is that he's sort of available in part because he's hasn't been real healthy. He's only played 11 games the last two seasons due to health reasons. You know, Fluker's had health issues, and Sweezy was released by Tampa Bay because he had broken his foot. He hadn't played at all the year before that. So, you know, kind of a similar thing. Just, yeah, kind of a one-year stopgap and hope he can help out in some way. But it certainly looks, you know, that Mike Garofolo of the NFL Network just reported that the Seahawks appear to be finalizing a deal with Fluker. So, if true, I think that's exactly what they will have done here. You just re-signed Fluker to play right guard. You replace Sweezy with Iupati at left guard. You still got Ethan Posick and Jordan Simmons and the young guys you filled in for those guys last year to compete. And, you know, everybody else is back. You got Ifedi Brown and Britt, and they re-upped George Fant as well. So, you know, other than Sweezy, you're basically bringing the exact same offensive line back from last year. So, you know, that was sort of the hope, was that they could maintain as much continuity with that line as possible. And like I say, in Iupati, even if he hasn't been a Seahawk, there's some continuity there in having run the exact same system under the same coach.
And on the defensive side of the ball, the Thomas departure certainly, you know, creates a bit of a concern. But, you know, they ended up signing Michael Kendricks back on a one-year deal. Maybe you can bring some clarity to Kendricks' situation here in a moment. But KJ Wright getting re-signed today as well for 2 years and up to about $15.5 million. How much of a priority was KJ Wright for the Seahawks to re-sign this offseason?
Well, I mean, priority is always a tricky word. I mean, your priority is if the price is right.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I sometimes I think people would think priority is just like, oh, you got to keep him no matter what. Mm. I mean, he probably nobody on the team ever is that other than your quarterback, probably. You know, everybody else, he's got to kind of fit in, and the market's got to dictate it a little bit. They certainly wanted KJ back. You know, they always said that, but, you know, he's going to be 30 years old. He's coming off knee surgery. He only played 5 games last year. It always has to be within reason. You know, this was KJ Wright's first attempt to go into free agency at all. I think initially he was sort of excited by that prospect, but the knee and the age was going to be an issue for him. And I think if he started taking visits and, you know, you have to go take the physical, and maybe it looks good with Team A, but then they get you there and they say, maybe we're not that interested after all. I think there was just a lot of familiarity here with KJ. You know, he said he wants to live here the rest of his life. His wife is from here. You know, has kids now, the whole shebang. And so I think maybe for him, at the that with this probably being the tail end of his career, it was a lot easier when push came to shove. The Seahawks were like, look, if you take this, you can stay for a couple more years and all that, instead of getting on the free agent merry-go-round. You know, usually when you leave your first team, that's a little bit of what starts to happen at that point. Is, you know, it can be one team for 2 years and then another for a year, that sort of thing. So, I think that's what the Seahawks were sort of hoping would happen, is that they could get. And so, they're getting KJ for a little bit less than I think people had speculated he might be able to get on the open market. But KJ was probably happy to make that trade-off to kind of make this easy for him that way. But it certainly, you're right, helps the linebacking core for sure. They're banking on Michael Kendricks being available. We'll see. They're going to find out for sure in about a month when he has a sentencing in Pennsylvania. But the contract for sure is structured in a manner that they're not paying him any money if he can't play. But this allows them to have him under contract if he is available to play. And they are optimistic that he will be. I'm sure they probably know a lot more than we do about what's going on behind the scenes and his lawyers and talking to the government, things like that. So, hopefully there'll be some more clarity to the public there in a few weeks and all that, but the Seahawks are certainly counting on it.
And I'm reading all this correctly, right? They signed a kicker for a 4-year deal, Jason Myers.
Yeah, it's sort of more accurately a 2-year deal. Okay. And again, this is always the problem with free agencies. There's the initial leak by the agent to a national guy that makes it look as good as possible. 4 years, $15 million. Then you get the contract a day or two later, and nobody's paying attention, and you see what it really says. It's more accurately about a 2-year, $8 million deal, then the Seahawks could get out of it pretty easily after that with not a whole lot of pain. So, but for sure, it marks a little bit more of an investment than they had made the last couple years, where they signed guys to 1-year contracts. And I think they feel comfortable with Myers because they do know him. You know, he was here. They signed him last January. He's with the team through until late August and until they decided to keep Janikowski instead. And I don't think Myers did anything to lose the job. It was just, when they signed Myers, he had just been cut by Jacksonville. Janikowski came available after that. And, they sort of jumped on that and they gave Janikowski some guaranteed money. And so I think it was always, as long as Janikowski looked healthy, they were going to keep him. And so they waived Myers, and then he went and had a career year with the Jets and upped his value quite a bit. And so, Janikowski got hurt a couple times at the end of the year, obviously had a couple of misses as well. So, they're just kind of trading guys here again. But, the financials of that is not as drastic at all for the Seahawks from a risk standpoint as just that 4-year $15 million might make it appear.
As we let you go, Bob, is there any other position group on this roster that you believe Seattle might still want to try to bolster in free agency, or do these flurry of moves, whether it be the offensive line with Iapati and Fluker or Wright and Kendricks and all that, do you think they're pretty much set with what they've done?
I think they'll still make some moves, but yeah, this sort of keeps in line with what they've always done of in general trying to kind of keep their team together as much as they can. And that's when they get Fluker done here. That's kind of what they will have done here by re-signing Wright and Kendricks and Fluker and addressing a couple of obvious needs, kicker. I still think the defensive line is an area where they're going to try to add some guys. Obviously it's not going to be the really, really big ticket guys, but I'd be stunned if they didn't try to do that. And I think receiver as well, but again, obviously it's not going to be the guys you're paying $10 million a year to. They have one of the highest receiver payrolls in the NFL as it is, with Tyler Lockett and Doug Baldwin and sort of Jerron Brown. So they, it's kind of an area they've got to be somewhat economical with. So I don't think anyone should have anticipated they'd spend a lot of money there, but I can see them wait another day or two. And, when you get that second, third tier guys who come a lot less expensively after they sort of realize that their market maybe isn't quite what they thought it would be. Now, I think that's what the Seahawks will do, is try to add a receiver and a defensive lineman or two, definitely a rush end kind of guy out of that mix.
Well, we'll definitely be on the lookout for all that, Bob. I know it's a very busy time. I appreciate you taking the time and giving us some of your thoughts and insights. We'll follow you on Twitter at B Condota. Thanks for joining us.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot. Talk to you guys later.
That's Bob Condota joining us on the Bald Face Truth. Appreciate him taking the time. Coming up, more of the BFT and the BFT Radio Network. Tyson Alger of The Athletic gives us the latest from Oregon Ducks spring football, plus more Seahawk talk at the bottom of the hour. John Cazzano will join us live from Vegas at 2 o'clock.